Matt Williamson and Ryan McDowell.
Welcome to another edition of the Dynasty Blueprint. I'm your host, Ryan McDowell, joined as always by Matt Williamson. Matt, how's it going today?
What's up, brother? This is a first for us. We got a whole room full of people gabbing tonight. This is going to be fun.
We do. We don't just have one guest tonight. We have two guests, and I've been excited about this one for a while. We have a reunion of the Fake Goods podcast. We have Rich Rebar. We have Chad Scott. Boys, how are you all?
I'm good, man. I'm happy to be with you guys again, and happy to join Rich. This reunion is going to be epic. I'm excited.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this one as well. We kind of had a little schedule hiatus there. We couldn't get on the same page, you know, all four of us at once. But we got here, and, you know, earlier when I signed on, you guys thought my computer was frozen. But I was just awestruck by the vision that is Chad Scott, you know, in person. You know, just seeing him again, it just warmed my heart so much that I was just frozen there.
Yeah, we miss you guys on the air together, and I'm sure you missed each other too. We had to give you a few minutes of alone time, but now we're ready to talk some football. Fake Goods podcast was just, I loved it so much. It was my favorite weekly listen. Chad's comedy and personality, and Rich with the numbers, the stats, the data. It was the best. We miss you guys.
I think you have that flipped around. I had the stats and data, and Rich had the funny.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Right. Yeah. Remember. Yeah. I taught him everything he knows. Remember.
I get you too confused.
I know it's easy. I miss it for sure.
Yeah, we all do. Chad, I guess, took a little break from Fake Goods, from fantasy football as a writer. And now he's back with DLF. He's one of the co-hosts of the DLF Dynasty podcast. And Rich has also moved on. He's now at Roto World doing the worksheet and so much other great content for them. So guys, since your listeners have been missing you for a while now, I thought we would just kind of cover a lot of the off-season stories and get your all's take, kind of an off-season in review, if that's okay. Let's start with a couple of surprise retirements. Jay Cutler, Tony Romo, it's been a few months, of course, but both of those guys hung it up. They're both going into the booth now. I think both of their teams were prepared to move on without them, but fantasy owners were kind of left holding the bag, especially in super flex leagues like we play in. Rich, what do you think about what was your take on these two guys stepping away from the game?
I mean, Romo wasn't as surprising. You know, I mean, we definitely thought he could have had like a one or two year short stint at somewhere like Houston, a team that's on the cusp of winning. He could push them over the edge. The color was pretty surprising. I mean, given he was still a little bit on the younger side. He's had a multitude of injuries as well. But, I mean, he was a guy I think that we all thought was still going to keep playing. His was kind of a shock. And I really didn't – I've never pictured Cutler as more of a commentary guy either. So for him to kind of quit to do commentary was kind of a weird chain of events there. And I was one of those people that drafted Cutler in KS5, you know, with a couple bucks there at the end. So I definitely missed out on him. I thought he'd go to the Jets or maybe possibly the Texans, you know, after they missed out or a number of places that still needed quarterbacks. I thought maybe the 49ers were a possible spot, you know, just kind of be a bridge guy for a few years with Shanahan. So he was kind of surprising, but I mean, it opens opportunity now. I mean, we see now the Bears are going to move on. They moved on to a rookie now. We're going to have Mitchell Trubisky at least be a starter for 4 or 5 years now, barring when he enters play there at the end of this year, halfway, but he's going to be a starter for now 4 or 5 years, new blood in our super flex leagues. Now we knew Dak Prescott, you know, was the future of the Dallas Cowboys now based on last season. So he's got a spot, and, you know, it opens up these doors now for, you know, all these other opportunities for quarterbacks now.
Chad, that seems like more of a move you would have made, buying Jay Cutler at just the wrong time. How did you avoid that?
Well, yeah, I think I was going to bid on Rich, and then Jay Cutler sent that ass pick from the island, whatever they were at, and I kind of knew it was over after that. But no, I think the emphysema from smoking Jay finally caught up with him, and that's why he had to finally call it quits. Hopefully he can broadcast okay with a trach or something. I don't know. But yeah, I don't think either one of these were completely surprising because he was kind of in DGAF mode for the last 10 years anyway. So I don't really have anything to add.
Cutler threw me off though, man. Why wouldn't Houston go get Cutler the second Romo retired? I mean, to me, that made no sense. Or even Jacksonville. I mean, they would be the best team in that division with Cutler.
And he was free. It's not like Romo, right. Still, you know, Romo still needed to be
right, right.
More at a point. Cutler was paying.
All right, we've got a lot to cover, so let's move on. The next one is, I don't know, maybe the biggest story of the offseason, potentially, at least for fantasy football, dynasty football. Marshawn Lynch, he returns from his retirement, much like Chad Scott returned from his retirement, both with Seattle ties. But we saw Lynch retire via the Twitter picture, hanging up his cleats. He walked away on Super Bowl night. And then more than a year later, he comes back. He ends up with the Raiders. Chad, like I said, you are up in Seattle. You're a Seahawks fan. I know you've been a Lynch fan as well. I'd love to hear your take just on that whole situation and what you expect from Lynch this season.
Yeah, I mean, he couldn't be going into a better situation for running back. The only thing that scares me is, you know, he's tailing off at the end of his Seahawk career. Injuries are starting to catch up. The way he runs, I mean, it was bound to happen. He's up there in age. I think he's 31 right now. Not much tread left on those tires, but he is in a great situation. I don't know if he can sustain a full 16 game season. If he does, I think he's obviously a lock for an RB1, but at the price he's kind of going in now, and I've seen him going in the third, sometimes late seconds, I don't know if I'm willing to risk that sort of draft capital on him when I think I'd probably rather have DeAndre Washington for cheap, for basically free, much later in the draft.
Rich, what about you? What are your expectations of Lynch this year?
Yeah, it's interesting. Chad kind of hit upon it. When he left Seattle, I mean, he was dealing with the sports hernia. He had some injuries, wasn't playing well. O-line wasn't good, but we really can't use the O-line cop-out, you know, for Marshawn Lynch, because that was the year undrafted Thomas Rawls went nuclear behind that same offensive line. It's tough to really, you know, give him a free pass there. I mean, the situation's a good one in Oakland. So, I mean, we can't really discard him completely. I mean, Latavius Murray is a guy I think we all would agree, like, has his shares of issues as a runner, but he was a usable fantasy asset because, I mean, the Raiders gave him a plethora of scoring opportunities. I mean, Murray had 17 carries last year from the 5-yard line and in. That was sixth in the NFL, and that was including his missed games. So, I mean, one thing we think that Lynch can still do at minimum, regardless of what Pete Carroll thinks, is fall into the end zone, you know, from short if you're knocking on the door. So, I mean, touchdown upside is definitely there. I think he's an interesting spot in Dino because he was probably picked up off waivers now. Like, the mm-hmm. second he came back, he was probably sitting on waivers. So, I mean, you got, like, some house money to roll with, whether you picked him off waivers and you dealt him, or you just picked him off waivers and you just see what you're getting. Redrafts probably is a guy. He won't be a guy I touch, but I mean, I don't mind, you know, for what you have him for in Dynasty. Cause there was really no indication to hold either when he retired. I mean, he was a guy that looked like it was totally viable. Like, he's done. He was doing the circuits. He was a media presence, basically. There was no signs to that. So, I mean, I don't mind if you pick him off waivers, you just want to see what you get.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like there's much in between on our opinions on Lynch. It seems like people either think he's going to get hurt, there's no way he can last, he can be active a full 16 game season, or he's locked in as a running back one, as Chad said. And I think it really does just come down to his health and him staying on the field. If he does with that O-line, Chad, like you said, he's locked in if he can, in fact, stay healthy and stay on the field.
I tend to think, though, even if he looks terrible and is done, I would still think he's the goal line vulture and a really good offense behind a good offensive line. I mean, as a minimum, I think he could, you know, still be a touchdown producer for you. What do you guys think? I mean, just fantasy aside, Lynch, Peterson, and Charles, I think I trust Peterson the most, and not necessarily where I draft him in fantasy, and definitely Charles the least of being, you know, of having anything left in the tank.
Yeah, and I think all the contracts that all those three guys were given bear that out too. I mean, Charles was given a min salary. I don't even think with really a lot of bonus opportunities. And Peterson plays with the best offense in the NFL, you know, for fantasy purposes. The team that has provided consistently the most fantasy points. They've been first or second in skill position fantasy points in each of the last 11 years. So, I mean, you know, he can be a guy that gets partial work and still be successful, a guy like Adrian Peterson. So I think that's right. It probably is. The gap from Peterson to Lynch is probably more interesting than what we really think. I mean, Peterson, right, obviously there's Mark Ingram there, but, you know, we're talking about a 5-round gap in, like, regular redraft leagues and PPR leagues, the way it is in, like, MFL 10s, if that's going to bear out what we see in PPR leagues, the gap there, which is probably exploitable.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I feel too. I mean, And a lot could be said for, you know, Lynch taking the year off and that resting. But I think on the other side of that is that could actually maybe be even a detriment to his body, taking that year off or year plus off, out of the NFL, out of practicing, out of the grind of the NFL. And I think that actually might take a toll on his body more than the actual NFL practicing and slash games.
Yeah, well, obviously between the suspension and his injury last year, Peterson has missed plenty of time over the past year or two as well. So that has to be a concern with him too. Next topic, Colin Kaepernick. We know the story there. He opted out of his contract. He's taking some flack for that, but that contract was never happening anyway, at least the 2017 year of that. So I don't get that piece. He was moving on from the 49ers one way or another. So the surprise to me is that he can't get a job. You know, today we saw, who was it? Dan Orlovsky, I think, got signed today. Yeah. And Colin Kaepernick can't even get a job. There are teams, I think, that he could start for week one. Rich, what's your take on this whole story?
I thought for sure he was going to sign with Seattle when all that stuff was going down. I thought for sure, because here's the thing. We know about all the ancillary stuff with Colin Kaepernick and why he's really not signed. But I will say this in defense of some NFL teams is that you're basically signing to be a backup at this point. And if you're signing Colin Kaepernick to be a backup, you're basically saying if he has to play, we have to change our whole offense. And backups usually come in and fill in and they take over the offense that's already in place. But Colin Kaepernick can't do that. He's a guy he's a backup that you have to suit your offense for. So it works inversely. So, I mean, it's going to be tough for him to land a job just based on that, unless like an injury opens up and there's a starting position for him. Because what teams can pick him up and still run their offense? There aren't many. I thought maybe, I mean, Dallas seems like it would make some sense. They could really run the football, have a mobile quarterback. They can kind of use Colin Kaepernick the way he was used, in 2012 and from that point on. But, I mean, he ain't going to Texas. Like, Texas ain't bringing Colin Kaepernick into play. So, I mean, we know why he's really not signed, but I will say that there's a little bit there, too, of just the timing of why he's still on the streets because of where we are. Oh, but with camps opening up and he's going to be a backup. So, I mean, it's tough to bring him in.
Yeah, I get the stuff with, you know, why he wouldn't be signed. I mean, people compare him to Tebow as far as the, you know, the media presence that he draws. And I get that. If he's locked in as your backup, that's not something you necessarily want to welcome into your locker room. But my thought is he could be the starter for 3, 4, or 5 teams in the league at least. And maybe that does just come down to changing your offense, Rich, like you said. That's certainly not something teams are looking to do at this point of the year. The next one's kind of a juicy one. The Patriots and the Saints pull off a trade right before the draft. Brandon Cooks goes to New England, essentially for a first-round pick. Chad, I'd love to hear your thoughts on Brandon Cooks and his role in this Patriots offense.
Yeah, I mean, you can't get a better role than what he had in New Orleans as far as I'm concerned. But he's going to another quarterback who likes to spread the ball around as well. If anything, I love that he went to the Patriots just because of a guy that I'd want to talk about later, but versus the ADP, the Fallers in Malcolm Mitchell. But I think he's going to be good in this offense. I don't know if he's a top, like a wide receiver one type. But if he's my wide receiver two, I'm really happy with, you know, the potential outcome that could happen there in New England. Cause I mean, nobody's going to be able to stop this offense. It's going to be fun to watch. And I think Brandon Cooks just offers another level of fun in this offense. And Tom Brady is he's going to be pretty amazing this year. But I mean, that was such a horrible trade by the Saints. I never really got that trade by the Saints. Matt, what's your take on that trade? I mean, just the trade in general.
Yeah, I mean, my thoughts originally were, okay, he's kind of in Peyton's doghouse, you know, that they love Mike Thomas. Drew Brees can make, you know, chicken soup out of chicken crap, and we can, you know, be a little light at the receiver position. We're going to use all these draft picks on defense and, you know, try to build a young core there. And, I mean, it doesn't really matter that they use that pick on a tackle, but, you know, I expected that, obviously, to end up being either Malcolm Butler or a defensive player. But in the end, I really am with you that I think New England got the better of the deal. It's not like he's an old man. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to keep have him around for a little while, and I think they're going to use him in a lot of ways. You know, that they threw deep a lot more last year than people realized, but it was to Hogan and Gronk. Now they get to do it to Cooks.
Yeah.
Rich, what about you? What was your take on this whole trade and everything that went down with Cooks?
Yeah, I mean, for a team that only made three or four draft picks, did anyone have a greater draft than the Patriots? I mean, it essentially took Brandon Cooks in the first round. They took, Dwayne Allen in the fourth round. They took Mike Gilsley in the fifth round. Like, those are their draft picks. Like, that's what they did. That was, like, when you look at their draft as a whole, I mean, that's a phenomenal draft.
I think they traded maybe their third rounder for a defensive player from Miami as well. So, I think that's correct.
Tony Ealy. Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing. Tony Ealy. Yeah, Carolina. Dwayne Allen.
Yeah.
Dwayne Allen. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. Right.
Yeah, it was a fantastic draft. I mean, think about that. I mean, they did the old dynasty switcheroo, man. They traded their draft picks for proven production.
Yeah,
like a pro game, man. It was amazing. And Belichick's like a guy that's already hinted that, like, they're just not good at, like, wide receiver eval. And the second he made that trade, he basically, you know, admitted that, hey, we're getting a productive player, and that's what we did, is we traded a guy for. We weren't going to draft a receiver that was going to come in and be Brandon Cooks. I mean, for fantasy, it's a little interesting because, I mean, essentially – the bottom line is he has to be an even better player in New England and occupy a larger share of the team targets than he did in New Orleans to kind of roll over the same fantasy relevancy, at least in short term, because he's going to be losing overall team passing volume and overall fantasy scoring. I mean, since Cooks entered the league, the Patriots have run 216 fewer pass plays. From a fantasy PPR perspective, the Saints offense has accounted for 440 more PPR points over that span. So, I mean, it's kind of a gray area. I mean, I don't really care so much about the splits, his indoor-outdoor splits and stuff like that, and him not really playing cold weather games yet. I think just a byproduct of the situation he's had thus far in his career, I think he'll be fine. I mean, he was a guy that played at Oregon State. I think he can deal with the cold a little bit. So, I mean, I just think that it's just a lot to go around. The guy I'm the most excited for from all this, though, is Gronk, man. I mean, you bring a true lid lifter in. Like, Gronk's role shifted so much last year with a capable tight end. If Allen can just be a proxy of what Martellus Bennett was, Gronk was basically a guy. He was averaging, you know, 21 yards a catch last year in the short sample. Like, he's just going to be – they used him more as a vertical player than ever last year. And if you got a true lid lifter like Cooks, that's not Chris Hogan, and he did that with Chris Hogan, like, I mean, Gronk is just going to wreak so much havoc this year.
Cooks is an interesting one when you're studying his dynasty value. His ADP has basically been somewhere between 12 and 20 – since January of 2016. So over that time, we saw the Saints draft Mike Thomas, and we saw the Mike Thomas breakout year. Obviously, the trade that we're talking about, where Cooks is starting to see less volume, Rich, like you're talking about now, yet he's maintaining that mid-second round startup ADP. So we'll see if he can return anything close to that with his new role in New England. Chad, let's go back to some Seattle Seahawks talk. The Seahawks bring in Eddie Lacy after basically the Packers gave up on him. We all know the issues with his weight, and he's got, I guess, a clause in his contract that he's doing the monthly weigh-ins, and he's being asked to lose weight periodically throughout the offseason as training camp nears. As a Seahawks fan, were you happy about this signing, and what do you think we can expect from Lacy?
Yeah, I mean, I was at first I was like, you know, it's kind of whatever, but I mean, for what they paid and got, you know, we heard this before, you know, this is like the new beast mode 2.0, you know, kind of down years and then come to Seattle and hopefully hit it big like Marshawn did. But Eddie Lacy is his own man. That guy he's a beast. He's tough to bring down. It's exactly the mentality Pete Carroll wants in a runner. I think the weight clauses were huge, no pun intended, for Eddie Lacy, because he was getting a little too big to play running back, and his ankle is already pretty shoddy. So, I mean, more weight, you know, in the friction and all that, I mean, it's just going to add more problems for that ankle. So, I love him in this offense. I think this is going to be a three-headed monster anyway, with him getting the majority of the touches while on the field. But I love Eddie Lacy, and he's such a good value right now. Like, people completely written off Lacy. He seems to be getting a little more love now, but you know, a few months ago, once this happened, he was still pretty bottom of the barrel as far as running backs go. He's just kind of written off. So I could totally see an RB1, low-end RB1 season coming from Eddie Lacy this year.
One thing about all three of those guys, though, is they're injured a lot. You know, I mean, yeah. Carroll said that a few times about ProSize. But I think that could work to your advantage as the season goes on. That imagine when Seattle's playing San Francisco in week 5 or whatever, and Rawls is out, or ProSize is out, or Lacy's out, or two of them are out. You know, if you time it right and happen to luck into the guy who's healthy at the time, you may really make out.
Yeah. I mean, it's better than having like Kristen Michael and Fred Jackson back there besides, you know what I mean? Like it's a better three-headed monster than what it was. So, I mean, I'm happy about it. I'm actually ecstatic about it.
Do we know if it's common? Like Evan kind of brought this up on a podcast that I do with him, and like, is it common for football players to just work out like common people though, and just like do P90X? Like Chad, you do P90X.
Yeah, like, I actually got back into it once he signed here. I was like, all right, I'm getting back into it.
Like he's doing these weight clauses, but he's doing weight clauses and doing things to lose weight, not train like a football player. Is that a concern at all?
Maybe a little bit, but I mean, everything Pete Carroll does is so off the wall, and it's, you know, but it works. Like it seems to work for whatever reason. And, you know, I whatever he says, I basically trust at this point.
Sure you do.
You know, of course I do. I mean, I'm a huge homer. What do you want me to do? I mean, he's gotten to this playoffs every year since he's been here. So, I mean, how those Niners doing?
Hey,
I love you.
So ProSize and Lacy. ProSize and Lacy basically have essentially the same ADP. ProSize is 84. Lacy is 90. You're taking them in the same range. Probably can only get one. Chad, which one are you taking for a Dynasty startup draft?
Dynasty, I'm going ProSize. It depends on my roster construction, but probably ProSize.
Yeah. Rich?
Yeah, ProSize for sure. I mean, he's got the highest monetary commitment to the team. They have the most tied into him being successful NFL player. And Lacy's kind of in a precocious situation because let's say Lacy does play well. Does he price himself out of playing in Seattle next year?
Yeah.
All right, Rich, let's talk a little bit about your team.
You don't even ask me anymore. That's nice.
All right, man.
No one cares.
You're going to say Thomas Rawls.
I'll take ProSize too.
Yeah, don't sleep on Alex Collins being a thing at some point this year too.
I will.
I think that kind of makes sense. I don't love Alex Collins, but yeah. I don't know if any of these three guys can stay on the field. So maybe it will be Alex Collins, or maybe they'll sign. Maybe they'll sign Kristen Michael back. You never know. Hey.
They better not.
Rich, let's talk about your team now. And the player that everybody assumes will be their quarterback of the future, Kirk Cousins. He's again been tagged by the Washington Redskins, but we all know that won't happen this time next year. And potentially will be the quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers. What are your thoughts on this one, Rich?
Yeah, that would be pretty lovely. I mean, let's see if that really comes to fruition. I mean, Cousins will probably have a lot of potential suitors. You know, it's a quarterback thirsty market out there. I think he's aware of it. And once again, Washington, you know, completely, you know, screws up a situation. I mean, I mean until Dan Snyder's out of there, man, I just don't see how they can really ever turn the corner. I mean, you had the stuff with McLuhan this year and everything. It's just like, man, right when you think that they're building something, it's all this stuff keeps happening to Washington. I don't think people realize too how incredible Washington like was as an offense last year, at least from like a fan, like producing counting stats standpoint. I mean, like in terms of like drive efficiency, they were almost like knocking on the door of like the Atlanta Falcons in terms of like yards generated per drive. They have the fifth highest ever since 2000. They were only like a yard behind Atlanta last year. They just didn't score as many touchdowns. But they were epic. Now you lose two receivers that obviously have like clear quarterback rapport. Cousins has a body of work now with Garcon and a body of work with DeSean Jackson. He's not there anymore. But the talent wise, this group now probably has a higher ceiling than that group. It just depends what we get, you know, what do we get? And what happens in the middle of the season when the Redskins are mediocre? Does Kirk Cousins shut this thing down? Like, he knows he's not going to be there. They can transition tag him or possibly, you know, franchise tag him again for $35 million, but that's probably out. We probably think he's out the door. And he thinks the same way, you know, especially with them releasing the statement of the contract this past week. So, I mean, what happens if Doxson doesn't perform as well or Pryor doesn't perform as well and, you know, they're 6-8 going into week 14, you know, like this thing gets shut down, you know, does he not perform well down the stretch? And there's a lot to concern yourself with the situation surrounding Washington and a lot of their skill players in general from a dynasty standpoint, because we don't know who their quarterback is going to be going forward. And there's some guys with some great ADPs like Crowder and Doxson. Yeah. So, I mean, it kind of puts a little bit of shade on those guys.
Yeah, I think it's pretty easy to stay away from both of those guys at their current value, honestly. I'm not really too scared of Pryor on that one-year deal. You know, he obviously will have the chance to go elsewhere next offseason if he chooses. But I don't know, maybe I'm just buying into the talk so much because that seems to be the assumption that he will be the 49ers quarterback in 2018. Matt, I'm going to give you a chance. It's your turn. Are you ready?
No, thanks.
Real quick on Cousins, though. I just did a podcast yesterday, one of the millions that I do, and I came up with like 10 teams that I think would actually have interest in Cousins. I mean, this is the first time in a long time that a true starting quarterback in his prime is going to hit NFL free agency. I think it's going to be really interesting. And you look at Washington, are they going to end up with like Glennon or Alex Smith or Bridgewater? Like, they're probably not going to be bad enough to take Darnold or Allen or Rosen or one of those guys. Or another RG3 type of deal to move up.
Yeah, they've done nothing to prepare for the future, basically. Not only did they botch the contract, the contract talks with Cousins, but they, you know, they had a chance to draft a quarterback, even if they used a late round pick in the past two drafts, and they didn't really do that. But Matt, I wanted to ask you, just as far as how that has gone down, at least our understanding of it as fans and onlookers of this situation, have you seen something, a situation like that high profile of a player handled that poorly?
Huh? That's a good question. And I especially like the point you brought up that the real crime is a hard situation, first of all, because he's not good enough to be making what he is or to be one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league. But then, of course, then the other hand is, well, you have to pay a starting quarterback no matter what, or you have nothing. And, you know, imagine the Texans with Kirk Cousins last year. They may have won the Super Bowl. You know, I mean, he's good enough that he's a true starting quarterback, and you can't say that about enough guys. But I felt like it was botched from the beginning. I mean, to keep franchising him, you're just overpaying, and, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure how they could have done it better in terms of the money, but the thing that you mentioned, Ryan, that I think was really dead on was they have to see this day coming in the draft. I mean, even draft Davis Webb or some guy I don't even like, or Josh Dobbs, or at least somebody that could, you know, you can put him into starter a week 12 and see what he does when the season's shot. I mean, there's no plan.
All right, Chad, let's talk about probably your favorite story of the offseason. Your baby, your boo, Martavis Bryant.
Hey,
he's back. And I know you gambled big on him even before that news in leagues that we're in together. Yeah. You targeted him in some startups and probably in your other leagues as well. And that looks like it's going to pay off big. His value has been climbing since he got reinstated. You just have to love this news that he is back. Chad, thoughts on Bryant?
Yeah. Dude, you should see him at minicamp.
That's so I was going to say, like, I know Matt loves him and saw him and it looks like a completely different player and from by all accounts, and I mean, he, even his body looks completely different, which is insanely stupid at this point because dude just is an alien. But I am excited. Martavis Bryant, first 2 years in the league, his rookie and sophomore season, I mean, he looked the part of like a big play guy. And, you know, he got to play with Ben Roethlisberger. He was the number two behind AB, but he only started 8 games and still put up eye-popping stats, really. And now that he seems clean and everything's okay, you know, I have high hopes for him. And I've said it on the DLF podcast. I think he is one of the top talents in the league. And I think next year, by this time, we're going to see him drafted as a top 10 wide receiver.
Rich, what's your take on the Bryant situation?
Oh, I can't I can't wait for him to piss in my Cheerios right here.
I'm totally not. I mean, you always are cautious when you hear the offseason of when these guys off the field. You know, we heard it even during last year that Bryant was completely focused and channeled in on this being a course correcting situation for his career. You know, it's great to see this actually coming out into fruition. I mean, it's great for everybody. He has been the boat that raises all Steeler tides. I mean, you look at when he's been active since they drafted him. I mean, they've gone from a good offense to an elite offense with him on the field. Ben Roethlisberger throws for 60 more yards per game when he's on the field. I mean, he goes up to a high QB1. Even Antonio Brown produces more than he does when Martavis Bryant is playing. I mean, he takes that offense and makes it into an elite offense. And we saw last year, like, they were a good offense. They were fine. But when you've got just AB and Bell and your ancillary pieces are Eli Rogers and you're rolling out a hodgepodge of Sammy Coates, Darius Hayward-Bey, Kobe Hamilton at that other wide receiver spot, we had a glimpse of it. Like, when we had those couple weeks of Ladarius, like, it looked like it was about to be, like, some fun Steeler football again in offense. But, I mean, I think that it gets back there. I think it's just, like I said, he's the guy that makes that offense and everyone in the offense completely better. It makes it an elite offense. And because he was suspended, now you've got 2 years with him being with the Steelers instead of one.
Oh, yeah. This guy's going to make Jesse James look good. That's how good he is.
So, Matt, you've obviously seen a lot of Bryant through some early offseason work, and you've given us some updates already, but anything else from him, does the team seem pretty confident that he's over these humps and these issues that have plagued him and kept him off the field?
I would say cautiously optimistic. You know, like, he's got a new baby, and every time you talk to him, he's always talking about, now I'm a family man. My free time I spend at home as opposed to in the club. Yeah, I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but I mean, he did his rehab in Vegas, and we were laughing about that on the air. I'm like, that's the last place I'd go to get clean. You know, right? Like, let's go chill at Vegas while I'm off. But all he did was he had 6 hours a day of counseling, which I don't know what you talk about for 6 hours a day about smoking weed. And then he lifted the rest of the day.
I'll tell you.
And nice 6 hour conversation. And it seemed like that's all he did while he was suspended. And he was very focused. And we know that addicts and people with issues are the best liars in the world. I mean, he might be doing bong hits left and right. None of us know that. But I think it scared him. I mean, that's for sure. And realized how good he could be. But more importantly to me, or maybe not more importantly, but when you see him on the field, he's jaw-dropping.
You know, I've been a Bryant doubter, I guess, really since the suspension, only because I saw it going the Josh Gordon path. And, you know, when the NFL did not reinstate Josh Gordon and then he, you know, he had these other issues compounding that, I just expected it to play out the same way. I thought they were setting that path and Bryant was going to follow the Blackman and the Gordon path. And you know, we'd never see him play again, but just the fact that the NFL reinstated him, I think, speaks volumes and should give us a lot of encouragement and hope as fantasy players and as fans.
Yeah, and don't forget, I mean, Gordon got reinstated first. He just blew it again.
These are like my two favorite wide receivers in the whole world. Like, I have, that's how you know I'm an addict. Like, I love them. Like, and I want them to succeed.
We weren't going to talk Gordon tonight, but we'll just do a quick poll. Do you think there's actually been a little buzz, just Twitter buzz, nothing official, certainly, that maybe he gets reinstated right before the season? And I've seen him drafted in some MFL 10s and some of the Scott Fishbowl leagues. Rich, do you think he gets reinstated? Do we ever see Gordon again?
It's hard to believe. I mean, because I think the franchise has moved on from it as well. So it's just hard to really have any faith there.
Yeah, that's the other issue is obviously they're in this rebuilding process. They've brought in all these young players, all these draft picks the past 2 years. And I can't imagine them feeling good about bringing Gordon into that locker room, into that atmosphere.
I keep thinking he's going to end up on the Patriots.
God, I know. It's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking that for 3 years. That somehow Belichick's going to grab this guy and move in with Brady and catch 800 touchdowns.
That would be a fun story. So do you think that's – Matt, do you think that's I mean, are you just joking here? Do you think he plays ever again?
No, because that's what I have no idea. But I just could see Belichick saying he gets reinstated and Belichick sends him a 6th-round pick. And next thing you know, Gordon, Gronkowski, Edelman, and Cooks are all lining up with Brady in the shotgun just smiling.
Chad's just over there drooling right now.
I know. That thud you heard was my – never mind.
I mean, what other team would be after him?
Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah. Put him next to Dez. Yeah, they would do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, hometown.
God.
I mean, I don't even know where he's from. That's where he played college.
He's – oh, I'm getting moist just thinking about him in Dallas. Sorry. I keep drafting him like he's gonna be a thing again, but I don't know, I'm kind of losing hope after this last situation. So
let's move on. We're all a little sad about Josh Gordon. Another sad situation is the Jets offseason. They are clearly playing for, I don't even know if it's 2018, maybe 2020. They are totally giving up on the 2017 season. Among the many moves they have made this offseason, they dumped both Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker, and those guys found new homes with the Giants and the Titans, respectively. It seems like it's not just the Jets, though. The Bears, the Niners, the Browns, they all – I don't know if it's fair to say they're tanking or they're, you know, playing for Sam Darnold or something like that, but it seems like at this point, before training camp even opens, that we have a handful of teams that are just locked into losing almost all their games this season. And I don't know if we've ever seen that kind of volume at this point in the year before. What are your all's takes on the Jets specifically, but really all those teams basically playing to lose? Chad, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, at least the only one of those teams seems like that they have any idea at all what they're doing is the Browns. So, I mean, I think they have a calculated plan on what they're doing, whether that pans out for them and they get a top three pick to get a quarterback is, you know, that depends if Kaiser doesn't work out, which I don't think he will, but at least they have a plan. New York Jets, I mean, they're so willy nilly on what they're doing right now that, it's something that they probably need to do and move on from these older vets with big money contracts. But at the same time, it's hard because you're trying to sell tickets as well. And I don't know how many tickets are going to sell with the team they have. We know that the Jets have one of the, you know, the most diehard fans in football, but you know, even they can only take so much of this. And I mean, I couldn't even name probably more than 15 people on their team, and that's pretty sick. I really can't. I don't think I can.
Rich, we know the Jets are going to be bad. There's no doubt about that. Is there any fantasy value to be had though, either redraft purposes or in dynasty? Should we be chasing our Darius Stewart and Quincy Enunwa and Robbie Anderson, or is this just something to avoid?
Yeah, I mean, there's volume there. I mean, for the price is right. I mean, I'm not one that likes to invest in bad players and bad teams from like a redraft perspective, but I mean, there's volume to be had there for the price on these guys. I mean, our Darius Stewart is a guy who he is their largest monetary commitment at the wide receiver position. I mean, he's a guy that you can get for basically not much in rookie drafts, and you know, not much. He's not very expensive to acquire. I mean, Enunwa is kind of the popular guy. I mean, he's fine too if you like him, and Powell is fine as well. Yeah. Those guys are all right. I mean, for what you can get for the price, I mean, I don't really have a lot of quarrels with those guys. I mean, maybe if shifting to some of the other teams we do, maybe I don't expect a guy like Jordan Howard to do what he did last year. This year he's basically obviously made a full-on leap to where he is in like capital and market value. I think the Bears actually are the team in all this that actually think they're doing the right thing, which is funny. Like, I actually think the Bears believe like they're doing like good things. But how they've approached the past two off seasons and how they've spent money in free agency, I actually think that they actually believe in what they're doing. But I see a real scenario. If you look at the Bears schedule, like it's theoretically possible that they're 0-9. Like their schedule is absolutely just brutal. They might win one or two of those that we're not really expecting. Maybe they win a division game against the Lions or something like that. But, I mean, their schedule's atrocious. Like, I could really see them being the team that is worse than the Browns and the 49ers in this. The 49ers are doing what the Browns did last year, basically. I mean, them giving Lynch and Kyle Shanahan both five-year contracts for first-time head coach and GMs really says something, that they're not going to do what they did last time and just try to kick the can and try to string something out of what was a terrible situation, that they're going to slow build this. But they're going to be terrible as well. So,
just from an NFL perspective, though, the thing that separates Cleveland from those two teams is, first of all, they started a year earlier, but they've done a miraculous job of acquiring draft capital. You know, like the Jets. Yeah. I mean, you know, if Kaiser doesn't work, so what? They'll trade Kansas City's first and their first and go get the first round. You know, they have so many picks, and they had a ton last year, a ton this year, premium picks, three first rounders. Where the Jets are like, okay, we took a safety fifth overall and we'll do it again next year. You're like, it's going to take forever.
And then in the second round, we did it again. So, yeah, that's a great point. And the thing about the Browns, too, is even while they've been acquiring all these premium draft capital picks, they still use the top three-round pick on a quarterback each year, and they're going to give these guys a shot. I mean, Kessler played last year. They're going to see what they got. So they're still giving them a chance to run into something without investing that top 10 pick into a quarterback yet. I mean, we don't know if Kaiser's going to work out, but they'll give him a shot.
Everything that Cleveland has invested in, and it really showed in last year's draft, is all about the passing game. Everything that they've invested in is about the passing game.
All right, let's move on and talk about another big story of the offseason, and that is Joe Mixon. Due to his off-field issues and his history in college, he was a big story even before the draft. He, of course, landed in Cincinnati in the second round of the NFL draft. So he'll compete there with Giovanni Bernard and Jeremy Hill. And dynasty owners, and really all fantasy players, redraft and MFL 10 players included, have given up on both Bernard and Hill. Everybody seems to be all in on Mixon as far as his role there, except for the few who, you know, I guess feel compelled to avoid him due to that off-field history. And, you know, Matt, we've heard your opinion on the off-field stuff. I think you've said on here before that you don't care what they do when they go home, or is that still your opinion?
They can murder grandmas in their spare time and they can still be on my dynasty.
As long as they give me fantasy points.
I'm not cuddling up with them at night. I mean, this is strictly business.
Rich, what's your take on Mixon?
I mean, if we didn't have all that stuff, there probably was a realistic chance for Mixon to be like the consensus 101 in this draft class. So, I mean, you have to take that into account, the type of talent he is. And, you know, he's in that mold of what is the NFL now. When you look at what the guys that turn the tide at running back position, the David Johnsons, Le'Veon Bellows, you got these guys that are game script proof. They can do things in the passing game. They can do it in the running game. And that's Joe Mixon. That's what he is. He's a 225-pound guy that could do everything. He's a 225-pound guy that sometimes looks like he's like, you know, 190 pounds. He does things like that. I mean, that's the type of talent he is. I think there's a chance maybe for the short term that there could be like some kind of like hodgepodge where all these guys kind of do what they're good at. But I mean, you have to think that with Bernard coming off the ACL that he suffered right before Thanksgiving, he's probably not going to be a go right away. I mean, but I think there's reason why the other two guys' ADPs are where they are. I mean, Gio's there because he's Gio Bernard. He's a niche back. I mean, he's not a high upside player. There's a lot of Gio Bernards available in fantasy for a lot cheaper than Gio Bernard. That's why he's priced there. And then like Hill, we kind of hit upon already.
Chad, what about you? Are you buying in on Mixon?
Oh yeah. As evidenced by your constant trades to try to acquire him for your services.
That's right.
I think he tweeted this out the other night, is that you know, after Gio's rookie year, he was RB5 the next year in startups. After Hill's, he was like the RB3. So if Mixon's like top five this year, I'm going to sell him because he's going to fall off the map because he's a Bengal running back apparently. But no, I mean, Rich has got it right. I mean, this guy could have legitimately been the 101 in this year's draft had the off-field issues not been there. I don't necessarily think that Jeremy Hill is going to be on the team. And I know a lot of people are saying that, but it makes sense that he wouldn't be once week one starts. But, you know, I like Gio Bernard still because he's really cheap. He's kind of like a poor man's Theo Riddick that you can get cheap. So, I mean, I don't mind him where he's at now. But when he was being drafted as a top five guy, I think that's when the red flags kind of showed themselves. And that's when we should have sold. But Mixon is a guy that can kind of be RB5 and be that guy, you know, for 3, 4, 5 years, you know. So I'm in on Mixon. I love the talent and I love the situation.
Matt, as big of a story as Mixon has been this offseason, he's not a player we've talked a ton about. What's your thoughts on Mixon in general?
As a player, I absolutely love him. I think he's on par and in the conversation with Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson in terms of ability and what he can do in all phases. Never take him off the field. You know, the off the field thing, it happened. I mean, I'm not never excusing it, but it happened a long time ago and the Oklahoma coaches raved about him. I'm kind of rooting for him, but I hate his landing spot, and not because of Hill and Geo. I just think if anybody's going to screw up off the field, it's going to be loafing with Pac-Man Jones. And, you know, like I don't love that, but more so, I think that's the worst offensive line in the league.
Yeah, if Mixon can overcome that offensive line and put up a big season, then he certainly will be following Bernard and Hill as being drafted as a probably a top five dynasty running back next offseason. Another running back with some off-field troubles, his more recent, is Ezekiel Elliott. Again, we know the story there that he was drafted to the Cowboys last year, had the huge rookie season, and dynasty owners are treating him like the next big thing. He's been a top four dynasty startup pick all offseason long, according to our DLF ADP. But these issues have been lingering there. There's these reports of domestic issues with him, and then the more recent bar fight and the traffic speeding violations that people seem very concerned with, and pulling down the woman's top at the, I think it was a St. Patrick's Day parade or some type of party. So it's just issue after issue with Ezekiel Elliott. And at this point, lots of talk of a possible suspension. And it seems like a lot of people are basically expecting that at this point. So maybe a question of how many games rather than will this actually happen? Rich, what are your thoughts on Ezekiel Elliott as a dynasty asset?
Yeah, I mean, it's the thing with Zeke is, in you look at these things and it's he hasn't been convicted of anything really, and none of these things seem like they're like in the law abiding ways is really that detrimental, but it's just the accumulation of being in the wrong place at the wrong time frequently, and you know, probably enjoying his celebrity a little too much to this point. And you know, you kind of hope that he gets the wake-up call, like, hey, like you can only, you know, go this far to the line so many times and get so many passes. And, you know, it's kind of concerning there in that regard. But, I mean, he's 21 years old. I mean, we all were 21 years old as well and did a lot of dumb things in line with things he's done, not in the domestic violence sense, but in the other channels of the, you know, speeding and possibly, you know, you'll be partying, you know, being in the wrong place. You got buddies. I mean, it's tough, but I mean, it's hard for me to really say it has an effect on how I view him long-term right now. I'm not really that scared at this point because I mean, there has been nothing yet. Like he hasn't been convicted of anything. There hasn't been a lengthy suspension. It hasn't put him in like the 3-strike rule. Like where we worry about Martavis Bryant, we worry about the next time. Yep. The next time he's gone. Le'Veon Bell, the next time he misses a season. With Zeke, these citations where he's in trouble now, I mean, there's while you don't want to see him have those things, there's no way to know that this is something that can really hamper him from officially missing whole NFL seasons like those other guys.
Chad, what about you? Would you be buying low? And of course, when I say buying low, I haven't seen big discounts in Dynasty or even in redraft.
I don't think anybody's giving him away.
Right. He's still, I mean, he's still going, what, Rich? He's certainly still going in the first round of MFL 10s, even over the past week or so. So not much of a discount, but would you be buying low on Zeke?
Yeah, I mean – if he's at the 105, I'm taking him. And it's like Rich said, like he hasn't been convicted of anything. So I'm not completely sure any of this is even going to be relevant come week one. But, you know, it is in the back of our minds. He's at a position where, you know, Martavis and Josh Gordon, you know, they're wide receivers. They have longevity. You know, we don't want Zeke missing out on his prime years if he gets suspended, you know, once, twice, three times he's out. So, I mean, that's another concern is the position he plays. Because if he does kind of get to that point, there's no selling him at that point, I don't think. And so it's a fine line of what do I trust here? Do I trust Zeke to do the right thing, or should I sell him now while I can? And while I think that might be the smart play, I mean, he's in a great spot in Dallas where Dez went through the same thing when he was younger in his career. He can kind of take him along and kind of show him the ropes of be kind of that role model for him if he chooses to. So, you know, I'm kind of torn on Zeke at this point. His biggest crime though is his little tummy tees that he wears. That's like the biggest crime to me, man. I don't understand it.
How many game suspension should that be worth?
Six, yeah. At least. I mean, half season. That's worse than marijuana. Come on.
Think about how bad it is that college football got rid of players being able to do that after he played.
I know. I mean, it's he wore it to the draft in a suit. That's the red flag that we should have known right there.
That's true. That's a good point.
Yeah, something's off with this dude. There.
Yeah. There's something really off with this guy.
So I mentioned that Zeke had been a top four pick all offseason. David Johnson has as well, or I should say top five for Johnson. And then we've got Le'Veon Bell is locked in as a first rounder in dynasty drafts. When you think about dynasty rookie drafts, they begin with some combination or some order of Leonard Fournette, Joe Mixon, Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook. And I'm just starting to wonder if maybe dynasty strategy, that dynasty team building, is moving back to a running back heavy philosophy. Is this just a trend, or what do you think, Chad?
I think for right now, it's has to do with the talent that's kind of coming out of college at this point. And another thing is wide receiver. It's very hit and miss. You know, running back's a fairly easy thing to do. It's a fairly easy transition from college to the NFL to play running back. You know how to play running back, you just go do it, right? For wide receiver, there's so many nuances that come along with that you might not ever succeed in the NFL, even if you are a 101 draft pick in your rookie drafts. And so I think that a lot of people getting burnt on the early picks on wide receivers, I think maybe that has something to do with it. But on the other end, it's also the talent coming out of college at this point. These running backs are just insane. And the older running backs are aging. So, I mean, it's kind of a combination of all of those things that we're trending towards this running back situation, I think.
Yeah, and that's the big thing you kind of hit upon. I mean, if you look at just 3 years ago, it's just basically the rollover of the running back position. You look at the top running backs, the running back position just in 2014, I mean – Matt Forte was turning 30. Marshawn Lynch was turning 29. Aaron Foster was turning 29. Jamaal Charles was turning 29. Those were the top prime running backs. There wasn't a lot of youth. We had Le'Veon Bell, DeMarco Murray, and LeSean McCoy were in there approaching 27, 28-year-old seasons. I mean, and now we've got, you know, guys like David Johnson in their prime. Devontae Freeman's 25. Melvin Gordon's 24. Jay Ajayi's 24. Todd Gurley's 22. Jordan Howard's 22. It's just the way the position has rolled over and how that connects to the wide receiver position is the same way. I mean, Antonio Brown, Julio, AJ Green, Dez Bryant, T.Y. Hill, and all these guys are approaching that age apex, you know, curve for wide receivers. Not necessarily, we know that a lot of those guys are still going to be productive when they hit that age apex, but they're approaching the period where dynasty owners start paying attention to it and it starts to change their market value. I mean, look at a guy like Jordy Nelson last year. His market value doesn't change. Jordy Nelson can go catch another 15 touchdowns. It's not his market value isn't going to change in dynasty. And that's kind of where we are with running backs. It's just the position rollover. The position was old for a while and those guys have phased out and we've got this new talent coming in. And like Chad said, from the collegiate level and then combined with the wide receiver position, kind of getting a little longer in the tooth at the top compared to the running back position. I mean, you still got Evans and Cooper and Odell still in the mix there that are right there. But I mean, it's just the way the turnover has gone. And then, everyone inherently knows too that opportunity matters at running back position. Like Chad said, you mean guys that took Laquon Treadwell, you know, are more inclined to take a guy that's going to walk into just at least get this guy's going to score me points at least. Like this guy's going to get me points. You know, I'm not going to be holding the bag on my 101. You know, again, you know, guys like Corey Coleman. I mean, it's recency bias.
Kevin White, Doriel Green, yeah. Beckman, Rashad Perriman. I mean, the list is just silly.
Yeah. Ever since that 2014 season, man.
Yeah. We've got to say, I think you guys are dead on, and that was well said. It's just the NFL draft is pumping out better running backs than wide receivers right now. But if the same class of Odell and Evans and Watkins and all those dudes came out this year, would have been drafted them super high. You know, I mean, it's just what's available. Right. Real quick, I want to tell everyone about Loot Crate. Loot Crate's been our sponsor for a long time. They're good friends of the show here. Be the envy of your friends and get 100% exclusive crates at lootcrate.com/dynastyblueprint. Enter our code Dynasty Blueprint and you'll save $3 off an already very cheap subscription. August Loot Crate theme is Kingdom. I'll tell you about that in a minute. On a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, Loot Crate has it. The best surprise you know is coming every month. Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month and even cheaper when you use our code. If you're more of a fanatical fascinata, then try Loot Wear. Monthly wearables and accessories with cult classics and your favorite franchises. If you want to get fancy, try a bigger box with even bigger loot with Loot Crate DX. And this is my favorite. If you want to geek out your pet, try Loot Pets. That's awesome. Offer expires July 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific. So in August Loot Crate, you will find items from The Legend of Zelda, Adventure Time, and Lord of the Rings. One lucky subscriber will also win a mega crate of seriously epic proportions. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. to subscribe and receive this month's crate. And when that cutoff happens, it's over. So go to lootcrate.com/dynastyblueprint, enter our code dynastyblueprint, and you will save a couple bucks off an already cheap subscription.
Guys, we have kind of covered the off-season news as a review and gotten your all's thoughts on that. Next, let's cover the off-season ADP. And I've shared with you all, I also shared on Twitter, some of the top risers and fallers over this offseason, again, according to DLF's Dynasty ADP. So, Rich, looking at that list of players who have fallen, who have dropped since February, who's one player that you would be buying in Dynasty Leagues?
Yeah, looking at this list, most of these guys are warranted. I will say that I don't know if people are giving them up, but, I mean, if people are still – if I'm able to, I mean, Sterling Shepard is still pretty interesting that he's fallen so far. I mean, especially when you think about the Giants as a whole and what they do as an offense, I don't think he's really hurt altogether. I mean, think if, like, we talked about all these rookies that are busted. Imagine drafting Sterling Shepard and getting 65 catches for 700 yards and 8 touchdowns, like being unhappy. Well, I don't know, man. I mean, he's just a slot dude, I guess. But, you know, they bring Brandon Marshall in, who definitely, you know, hurts his touchdown upside. I doubt he catches 8 touchdowns again. But you look at the Giants and how they're built as an offense, like, they're not going to change their identity. Like, Sterling Shepard, they were on pass plays. The Giants ran 3 wide receivers or more on 97% of their pass plays. That's the highest in the NFL. It was 20% above league average. You look at their roster and what they've done, I mean, Sterling Shepard's going to be on the field the whole season again as a sophomore. So for him to drop 50 spots after one of the rare productive rookie seasons of the past couple of years, I mean, he's a guy I wouldn't mind picking up at that depressed price. I think that Sterling Shepard is a guy we kind of know where his ceiling lies as an NFL player, but I think that's fair still. He's still fair value, you know, around pick 100.
Yeah, I think those Shepard owners might be mad because they took Shepard over Mike Thomas. That might be Michael Thomas. Yeah. That might be the issue. So in February, Shepard had an ADP of 43, and in July, it's way up to 99, so a 56-spot difference. Chad, what about you? Who is one player from that list you would be buying?
Yeah, like Rich, I mean, I think a lot of these are warranted, but the one that really stood out to me that I kind of touched on earlier was Malcolm Mitchell. February ADP was 75.33. Now he is at 169.66. This is a guy that was a rookie in a New England offense that actually performed when given the chance. Not to mention he basically completely shattered his elbow in the preseason and came on and still did some nice things for New England in that offense. You look at this offense singularly, Gronk has been known to miss time. Edelman has been known to be dinged up. Amendola, same thing. And Chris Hogan is a replaceable fella. When we're looking at the long term here, Malcolm Mitchell is a solid buy to me. Like, give me that ADP. I will give you a third if that's what you want for him. And I will be stealing from you because I think this guy is going to be a gem in this offense. Maybe not this year. But come 2018, I think this is when Malcolm Mitchell really starts kind of trending towards getting towards the ADP where he was in February.
Yeah, and Mitchell is actually, of all NFL players, according to our ADP, he is the player with the second biggest drop. As you mentioned, Chad, he goes from 75 to 170 in just a few months. Matt, looking at that list, any players you would be targeting as a buy low?
Yeah, I thought those were two good ones. I don't think Mitchell's all that different physically, athletically, than Michael Thomas, to be very honest with you. I think they're very similar styles and strengths and weaknesses, just in different situations. I still like Tyler Lockett, but the one here that stood out to me was Devontae Booker. And I didn't really like Booker coming out of school. I really didn't like what I saw from him last year. But I think Jamal Charles is done. C.J. Anderson's often injured and probably not a feature back when it's all said and done. They added two new starters on the offensive line. They're going to have to run the ball a lot and play defense, no matter who the quarterback is. But the key is Booker's a really good receiver. I think he's their best receiving back. And, you know, I mean, that's a useful tool to dump off guy for a, you know, suspect or young quarterback. And they're also switching schemes, which I think might fit him a little bit better too. And I don't know that he was ever 100% healthy last year.
Yeah, Booker's a player that dynasty owners are really giving up on. His ADP goes from 132 to 181, a 49 spot drop. I feel like I'm cheating with my answer. I really thought Chad was going to say this one. But Tyrell Williams is near the bottom of this list.
I thought about
his, it. His February ADP was 63. It's currently 102, a 39 spot drop, and almost certain to see a huge spike in our August ADP after the Mike Williams news, or I guess the reports on Mike Williams that he could miss some time. Tyrell is once again a hot name in dynasty circles, so he won't be on this list for long.
And I'm pretty sure, but I looked at it, and as soon as they dropped or drafted Mike Williams, I nicknamed Tyrell Byrell Williams hashtag, and I think I was the first to say it. So I'm trademarking that shit right now on the Dynasty Blueprint.
It's all yours.
All right, let's move to some risers, some players who are climbing up the board, but maybe we're not sold on that. Chad, we'll start with you this time. Who is one player that is rising that you would be selling at their new inflated value?
I forgot to look at this one. Can you start with Rich, please?
I'm looking over it right now, too. And the first thing that jumps out to me from a market value standpoint is Willie Snead. I think a lot of people are expecting Willie Snead to get a big bump from Brandon Cooks leaving. But, I mean, if Willie Snead's going to be still playing the same role he had in the offense a year ago, and we saw a year before with Michael Thomas, his target share really didn't change. So I think that Willie Snead's about at peak value. I think the dilemma is you own Willie Snead is he's house money. Like, he's one of those house money players that you picked him up for free. So you can either ride out, like, you can't lose with Willie Snead. Like, you can trade and get value, or you can just take what you get. You can't lose. That's what makes him a little harder. But I think that his market value can't really get much higher. The interesting thing with Snead, too, is he's kind of been this rare breed of Saints receiver that has not been able to score touchdowns with Drew Brees consistently. He's scored in just 5 of 30 games the past 3 years. I don't think he has as large a ceiling as a lot of people think he does as a player. And then, that window of Drew Brees, how many years of Drew Brees do we have? I think both Saints guys, I don't think Michael Thomas is really good. He can improve his market value either. But I think I look at Willie Snead up all the way up to pick 50 now. Where 52, basically, if we want to round it, is probably a good time to explore what you can get for Willie Snead.
I've actually been trying to buy Willie Snead and have been met with some pretty sad results. His owners are wanting a first plus. So
what kind of first?
The good one.
Yeah, the good first.
Oh, yeah.
So
what do you have to ask?
Oh, yeah, you got to try. Snead goes from 99 back in February up to 52, a 47-spot jump. Chad, are you ready?
I guess. Okay. And it pains me to say, but just looking at this list right now, I'd probably have to say Amir Abdullah. And I love Amir. I mean, I think Ryan knows, Rich knows. I love Amir Abdullah. Like, he was my bae a couple years ago coming out. But, I mean, the dude just can't stay healthy. He's at, what, now 68 ADP? That's, what, like seventh? Is that seventh round, I want to say?
Yeah, that's sixth round.
Sixth round.
Yeah, I mean, even worse. I mean, sixth round for a guy that just hasn't been able to stay healthy for the first 2 years in the league. I love his game. I love his metrics. I love everything about him. But the fact that he can't stay healthy, I'm not investing that sort of capital in Ameer Abdullah. And if somebody's going to give me equal value to 68 right now, I mean, give me it all day. I will give you Ameer Abdullah. Give me whatever that equal is.
Matt, what about you? Which player are you selling from this list? Which highly?
Mine might shock people. First off, I'm shocked that Frank Gore is on this list, that his value is going up. I mean, he's in a wheelchair. He's ancient. And that's shocking to me that he's even on this list. But anyways, the guy that stands out to me that I would move at this current price is going to shock people is Christian McCaffrey. And I love the football player. I mean, I want him on my team. Receiver, running back, do it all. Get the ball in his hands. Returner, great football player, great character guy. That's tremendous. But I think what's being overlooked here is Jonathan Stewart's still good. You know, that he's a very talented guy that's up in age. They just gave him money. He's not going away. I think he's going to be on the field with McCaffrey a lot. That McCaffrey's going to be closer to a slot wide receiver this year than he will be the Stewart role. And when Stewart's dead and gone, I bet Carolina uses a first or second round pick on a 230-pound back next year or the year after. I mean, their formula on offense is a big physical ground game. And as much as I like McCaffrey, I think he's always going to be a Reggie Bush complimentary guy. And yeah, he's going to catch a lot of passes, but is he ever going to see the end zone if it's not an 80-yard run? You know, Cam's going to get all the goal line work or Stewart, and then those big goofs are going to catch a lot of passes in tight.
I like both that you guys brought that up. I was talking to Josh Norris about this a couple weeks ago, is that no matter how talented we think these guys are, and McCaffrey and Abdullah were guys that were in college, had proven workloads, and even a guy like Gio Bernard we talked about earlier in the show, but these guys are tweener builds. And when you get to the NFL, coaches and coaching staffs tend to treat tweener build types in tweener build type roles. Yeah. And that's what these guys have been kind of archetyped into in the NFL. And that is something that definitely, you know, a guy like McCaffrey could fall into as well. And I think we definitely think that the touchdowns are the problem. And that's what all these players run into, the same problem from a fantasy sense, in that the ultimate thing that matters in fantasy football is who the hell is scoring touchdowns. You're not winning fantasy games unless who's scoring. All you care about is who's scoring touchdowns. And these guys are great. They do a lot of aesthetically great things on the football field. We love those things. But when it comes to fantasy football, who are the dudes getting the money touches? And these guys aren't. Those types of builds, are those types of running backs, don't get those types of touches.
Ryan, do you think I could get two future firsts not knowing where they'll land for McCaffrey right now? Because I'd do that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, probably.
I think that's probably the going rate.
Yeah,
I think even better. Can you package McCaffrey and possibly get a running back you like a lot more, or a receiver? I think you can actually trade McCaffrey for proven commodity upper tier players.
For Sammy Watkins, maybe.
Close.
Or I don't know. I mean, some receiver you like. Yeah.
I think you could add a little piece and get Watkins, or get Robinson, somebody like that. Those, you know, people are kind of down on those guys right now.
Yeah, I was going to say A-Rob's bad though. Hashtag.
That's what I've heard. I've heard that.
That's what I hear.
Someone dropped the Allen Robinson, Braylon Edwards comp for career like situation. And I thought that was pretty brilliant, man.
That was pretty cool.
It was TJ Calkins or the
Dynasty. It was Calkins.
I thought that was pretty brilliant. I thought that was kind of like, man, it gave me spooky chills, because I was team Braylon Edwards a talent as well. And the situation and what he did, started a career. Their started careers are almost identical.
I was in the Browns war room when we drafted him. He was unbelievable coming out of school.
I mean, he was unreal, dude.
We had the third pick. Unreal. Yeah. We had the third pick in the draft, and he was by far our number one guy on the board. And then Alex Smith went, Ronnie Brown went, and then we jumped on Braylon.
Him and Winslow look like it was going to be like a 1-2 punch for the future for 10 years.
Oh, my. I got hired the day after they drafted Winslow and fired the day after we drafted Braylon. But to see Winslow as a pop was unbelievable too.
Man.
Well, let's finish up tonight with one of your all's old segments from Fake Goods, Start These Sitters. So in this each week, you guys would highlight a player ranked outside of the top 12 or top 24 who you expected to come up big that following week. Mm-hmm. So we're going to do this from a dynasty perspective. You guys hopefully have looked at the most recent dynasty ADP. Yeah. And it's pretty easy to pick a player outside of the top 12, quarterbacks or tight ends, or outside the top 24 running backs or wide receivers who might score as a starting player at their position. It's easy to grab those veterans that people are giving up on. So the question I'm asking tonight is, which player outside of the top 12 or top 24 is going to be drafted in the top 12, top 24 this time next year? So who do we see gaining dynasty value over the next 12 months or so? And we'll start with the quarterback position, and we will start with Chad Scott.
All right, yeah, the QB one was really hard for me because I can't really see much movement from the top 12 unless Tom Brady.
Someone out.
What's that?
You have to knock someone out.
Yeah, I mean, either Tom Brady retires or somebody dies. So, I mean, it's going to be hard. But, you know, so I went for it, and it's probably a really hot take. It shouldn't be because he's really good. But I'm going to go with Deshaun Watson. Right now, he's QB 18. I think he can get to QB 12 next year if Tom Brady retires.
You can't even say that one with a straight face.
Right? I know, it really hurt. No, but the only reason – so you look at his last two seasons, he went 8,700 yards passing, 76 touchdowns, 30 INTs. Tore his ACL in 2014, went on to rush for, 1,100 yards, 12 touchdowns in 2015 – scaled that back a bit in 2016, going 629-9. What I like about this is that, you know, they sent their future first for him. He's got a great defense behind him. They should have a good run game if Lamar Miller can ever break a tackle. He's got DeAndre Hopkins, Fuller, CJ Fedorowicz, Braxton Miller. They're playing in the AFC South times two. So, I mean, if anybody, it's going to be this guy. He's going to need a little bit of trademarked Rich Rebar Konami code in him to get to that. But I think he has a chance to be a QB12, the QB12 drafted next year. So I'll go with him.
All right. Good take there. Again, though, you couldn't even say it without without cracking up. That, you know, that is a good point, though. Not only are we projecting a player to rise in value, but you also have to think about which current top 12 quarterback could fall. And Brady is quarterback 11. He's 39 years old. So maybe, I don't want to say he's the easy call, but we'll see.
Kirk Cousins at 8 is too high too.
Yeah. Yeah. Rich, what about you? Who is your quarterback pick?
I like Chance because he's factoring how Dynasty is played. Like, even if Deshaun Watson has an okay year, like, he'll be overdrafted in Dynasty the following year. I mean, I'm still going to stick with my dude that I picked up everywhere, you know, before the start of the 2015 season. It's Tyrod Taylor, man. I mean, Taylor, I mean, you look at, he's been top 10 in points per game each of the last 2 years. No one likes him still. He is the Konami guy, as Chad said. I mean, he's basically rushed for a passing touchdown per game each of the last 2 years. He's rushed for 40 yards per game on the ground. And then you look at his situation and his contract extension, he could theoretically not be with the Bills next year and be possibly in a better spot. He could be on the market with Kirk Cousins as well. I mean, the way they restructured that deal, he has an $18 million cap number next year for 2018, but almost all of it can be avoided. And he has a $6 million roster bonus that can be avoided if they cut him, you know, before the season kicks in. So, I mean, and giving what we saw from the ownership from this year, if say the Bills are terrible, I think we all think they're probably going to be bad anyways, record-wise. What if the Bills are one of those teams that fall in, it's one of those teams we thought were going to be bad, you know, past them, and the Bills have like the number three pick or the number four pick, and they have a chance to take one of these quarterbacks. They were flirting with Mitchell Trubisky this year, the owner. So, I mean, they could get out of that Tyrod Taylor contract really easily. He can hit the market. I think he's been an underrated player from a real football stance and a fantasy stance the past 2 years. So, I mean, there's some dominoes that have to fall, but I think that even if he's stuck in Buffalo, you're still getting a huge value on where he's at now.
Yeah, a lot of what you said regarding just his future and kind of some doubt that the Bills maybe had in him, that's what, in my opinion, that's actually hurting his dynasty value. But yeah, if he puts up another productive season, then we can certainly see him.
How many teams would take him, though, if he was on the market? Like,
Would Baltimore re-sign Joe Flacco if they knew what Tyrod Taylor was? No. I don't think they would.
He won a Super Bowl.
Yes, he won a Super Bowl.
He's elite.
That's what it was, man.
Matt, what about you? A quarterback outside of the top 12 who you think could be inside the top 12 Dynasty ADP this time next year?
Well, in some way, I kind of cheated the assignment because I think the number 13 guy who's just, you know, on the fringe, Matthew Stafford, should be in the top 10 already, and he would be for me. I think he's on the verge of being a great quarterback and not just a really good franchise-type quarterback ascending. And then there's two guys real low here that I'm not suggesting are going to be top 10, top 12-type guys, but I think are also ascending, talented, that are dirt cheap, is Jared Goff and especially Sam Bradford. And I think McVay's a wizard. I mean, because I don't have any – Goff, to me, could easily do a Kirk Cousins. I mean, Goff is a better talent than Cousins. I'm not a big Cousins believer. To get that much out of Cousins, I think Goff is going to look like a quarterback this year. And I think Bradford is so easy to laugh at because he's made all this money and he was first overall pick. He's like good. You know, I'm like,
he played really great last year. He was really good.
And with the Eagles, he's been like 100 different systems, and every time he gets better.
Yeah, Stafford was actually my call too. I thought that was cheating as well. He's quarterback 13. Matt Ryan is quarterback 12, but there's actually almost two rounds of difference in ADP between those two players. So he's quarterback 13, but he's not necessarily close to cracking that top 12. So we'll let that one pass for sure. And now we'll move on to the running back position.
Stafford is still just 19 years old too. So that's cool.
I think that's right. We'll look at the running back position next. We're looking for a running back outside of the top 24 who will be in the top 24 this time next year. And this time we'll start with Rich.
I mean, looking at these guys, man, I'm looking at this Dynasty ADP and it's wild. Like, how is Dalvin Cook RB13? I mean, this is what really chaffs me in Dynasty, man. And we've got a guy that's never played at RB13. But I mean, I'm looking at these guys, like, I think the gap from Dalvin Cook to Kareem Hunt is laughable to me. I mean, like, RB13 to RB27 for guys that do a lot of similar things in the football field, and Kareem Hunt's probably an arguably better system that's been tied to, like, fantasy production, you know, Andy Reid running backs, and he fits the mold of how many Andy Reid running backs that have been successful throughout all of our lives. I mean, I think that they look at the Spencer Ware situation too, and they realize that 2015 Spencer Ware, less of Spencer Ware is getting more out of Spencer Ware in a sense. Mm-hmm. And Andy Reid made the comment during the season last year that Spencer Ware wasn't really in the kind of shape to have the kind of value he had. And they traded up to get him too. I look at him, if I'm going to take a rookie, I'm looking at a guy like Kareem Hunt for sure. I mean, he's just in that juicy situation, and he could easily elevate past a lot of these rookies, you know, come this time next year. And for him to be right around like Eddie Lacy, you know, Mike Gillisley, CJ Procise, I mean, that's a pretty sweet spot, I think, to take a chance on.
Yeah, I need to start going first on these questions. Hunt was my pick as well.
He was mine too.
Was it yours? Okay.
Obviously.
Yeah.
I have an alternate though.
I got a different one.
All right, Matt, who you got?
I got Kenneth Dixon. I mean, ooh. I really liked him a year ago. I didn't see any reason on the field to dislike him anymore. He's at 34. I don't think Woodhead's long for this world. West is just a guy. I think the Ravens' percentage of runs should go up if they're smart. They don't run the ball very much for some dumb reason. And I think he's an every down guy, a goal line guy, a receiver. I like Kenneth Dixon a lot.
I like that one.
Yeah, Dixon is obviously starting the season with a suspension. He's running back 34, being drafted just outside of the top 100. But looking at some of the players ahead of him, Spencer Ware, Paul Perkins, who I don't think any of us would.
Rich loves Paul Perkins.
Imagine taking Paul Perkins over, you know, Kareem Dixon.
Yeah, I could, yeah.
Certainly some room for Dixon to jump up the ADP ranks. All right, Chad, did you have an alternate or you want to move on?
I did. I'm going to go out of limb and say Jonathan Williams. Right now, RB42, he was my alternate to Kareem Hunt. I figured somebody else was going to say Kareem Hunt. But, you know, you look at him, he's kind of like Kareem Hunt, where he doesn't have any metrics telling you he's going to be like an elite NFL runner. But dude just knows how to play running back. McCoy is getting up there in age. There's a very good chance that he's not even on the team in 2018, as the Bills could save like $3.7 million if they cut him. They did nothing in this draft, in a running back rich draft, to address the position behind McCoy or Jonathan Williams. And so I think if McCoy is gone, and you know, at some point down the line in 2017, that McCoy might miss a game or two and Williams shows up, I think he could be the guy that kind of ascends into that RB24 within that RB24 role.
Yeah, Williams is an interesting call for sure. And going back to our risers and fallers segment, he was actually the top overall riser from February through July, going from an ADP of 235 up to 137. So a 98 spot jump for Jonathan Williams.
Greg Cosell thought Jonathan Williams was the second best back behind Elliott in that draft, if you base it off his sophomore tape.
Yeah.
When he wasn't injured.
Yeah,
I love Williams.
That's when Alex Collins got his chance, right? That's
right.
Yeah. If I remember, yeah.
Yeah, we did one of our last Fake Good podcasts, actually. Yeah. It was with Matt Friedman, and we had an extensive talk of how insane that people were to like Alex Collins more than Jonathan Williams.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that now. I was blacked out during the whole thing, but I remember it barely.
And now here we are, and Chad is touting both Williams and Alex Collins somehow. That's right.
Here I am. Here I am, world.
All right, let's look next at the wide receiver position. Again, we're looking for a player outside of the top 24. There's a pretty easy one. I want to see, maybe we might all agree on this one. We'll see what happens. Matt, we're going to start with you on this one. A player outside of the top 24 who should be inside the top 24 in next year's Dynasty ADP.
Well, Martavis is 25. I'm just going to skip over that. You guys know I'm in love with him. But there's three that kind of, I think Coleman, especially Parker and Doxson, are all in the same mold. They could jump in there. But I'm going to go down the list even more to 48, Perryman. I think Perryman's more talented than all those. I know everyone hates him at this point, and I keep talking about it. I've loved this guy forever. I can't quit him. That's back-to-back Ravens I just picked for some ungodly reason. But I think he could hit huge this year.
I like Chad, what about you?
Devin Funchess.
No one agrees with me on that one. Totally
kidding. No, I completely agree with you, Matt. I just didn't want to say anything because Rich really loves Mike Wallace. So I was afraid to say anything. I think at least the community is getting around on Mike Wallace. His ADP was stupid. I had Martavis Bryant, obviously. That is the easy way out. I guess I'm just sticking with Martavis Bryant for the reasons we said earlier in the
show. All right, Chad, any answer, any non-Martavis Bryant answer? I'm sorry, Rich, go ahead. Chad, we'll let you pass with that.
It's tough. A lot of these, like I said, either the Washington guys would have been choices if I had any kind of faith in that they were going to handle the quarterback situation properly, but I think we all think that's out the window. So it kind of makes them iffy. I think Cameron Meredith is interesting, yeah. 38, but I mean, it's what he's probably going to be stuck in like a quagmire this season. And does he really elevate, does he really push his value up more? I think Devontae Parker is pretty interesting at 32. I mean, I don't buy any of like the gas that's been coming out of OTAs because seemingly every Dolphins player is going to prove here, given everything that's come out. But I think when you look at Parker's play year to year, it's been positive. I mean, his rookie year to sophomore year was a big jump. Yep. It used to be these guys take, there's a development curve here for wide receivers, and he's on it. He's on the positive trend. I think there's also a chance that Jarvis Landry's not on the roster next year, given to how they've handled, bring Kenny Stills back. Kenny Stills got the same contract Kenny Britt got, basically. And they're still going to have to invest elsewhere in free agency. There's still holes on that roster. So I think Landry could be a guy they deem, kind of expendable. And when you look at the kind of wide receivers that have been really successful in Adam Gase's offense, they've been kind of guys in the Devontae Parker-ish mold, Demaryius Thomas and Alshon Jeffrey, those guys that you can get the ball to, in a plethora of ways. I feel like he's definitely the best Dolphins receiver in terms of all-around ability. It's just that he's on a team where there's two ancillary guys. Now, I can't even call Landry an ancillary guy. That's wrong because he's definitely not that. But you have a guy that's really good intermediately like Landry, and you have a guy who's really good vertically like Kenny Stills that kind of shaves off some of the things Parker could do in the situation that he's given right now. But I think he's capable of being an all-around good wide receiver. But, I mean, I'll just go with him just on the sake of, let's say hypothetically Landry's not there. I think he'll make a huge spike in, coming off of year three.
I think Parker is going to be my favorite buy midseason in Dynasty because – like you said, I mean, there's just not enough targets to go around with Landry Stills. They want to run the ball with Ajayi. Julius Thomas is supposed to score 20 touchdowns, apparently. He is the guy like I'm most excited to buy like come midseason.
Landry might be a great midseason sell.
Yep.
Right.
Let's finish up with the tight end position. And I don't know about you guys, but this was the toughest one for me. looking at some of the young tight ends you might expect to ascend in value, the three rookies and even guys like Hunter Henry, Eric Ebron, they're already being drafted as top 12 tight ends. Mm-hmm. Everybody's favorite guy to value lately, Kyle Rudolph, after his big season, is now finally in the top 12, being drafted probably like he should have been a year ago, possibly. So beyond the top 12 is kind of rough. Rich, pick one of those guys who can gain some value in Dynasty over the next year.
I just picked my favorite guy, and he made a big jump this year. But Captain Jack, man, I mean Captain Jack Doyle.
You love
Doyle. He had that small breakout last year, and the team completely said, "Nope, we're going to get out of this Dwayne Allen contract and move him and extend Captain Jack." I mean, he caught 60 passes, 600 yards, 5 touchdowns. He got all the way to 75 targets. I think he pushes 100 targets this year. I mean, Andrew Luck is a guy that has consistently used his tight end near the end zone. 32% of Luck's targets inside the 10 over his career have gone to tight ends. I mean, I think he's got scoring upside. I think he's got PPR floor upside. Captain Jack, man, just give him to me.
Give me.
Chad, what about you?
I'm actually going back to an oldie but a goodie in Austin Severian Jenkins. There's been some buzz lately where he's kind of starting to get an actual ADP in redraft and dynasty circles again. I thought about Jake Butt because I think at tight end 26, I think that's stealing because once he gets healthy, I think he's going to be really, really good. But with Austin Severian Jenkins, you know, he's still 24 years old. He doesn't turn 25 till September. If you remember back, what was it, 4 years ago now, he had great measurables, plays basketball. Obviously, that's a prereq when you're looking at tight end. But the most important thing for him is that he has been clean. He hasn't been drinking. He's been sober for, I think it's over 150 days now. He might not be on the best offense we talked about earlier with the Jets. But you look at their options, Anunua, Ardarius Stewart, they don't have any red zone options. This guy is 6'6", 260, supposedly in the best shape of his life. And again, played basketball, could box out. He can really be their lone red zone threat in this offense. And if he is clean, if he is the prospect that was drafted in round two by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I think this guy's a steal. He's going tight end 29, and he's still younger than a lot of these tight ends like C.J. Fedoritz, Kobe Fleener, Jack Doyle. He's got that upside. As long as they get a quarterback, I will spend a roster spot again on ASJ as long as he stays healthy or sober.
That was a guy I was gonna say him, and it wouldn't shock me if he leads the Jets in receptions this year and touchdowns. You know, he had those early knucklehead years. He seems like he's past that. He was a guy I was going to mention. Martellus Bennett at 14 surprises me because I think he's going to be a top five tight end this year. And I mean, Aaron Rodgers, I mean, that one shocks me. But the guy that really stands out is Austin Hooper. At 15, I think he's going to be a top 10 guy very soon. He didn't play very many snaps last year. And I mean, I don't know why he'd ever come off the field now in a good offense. Sanu and those other receivers, not named Julio, or nothing to write home about. I think Hooper is going to be a starting dynasty or starting fantasy tight end for the next 5, 8, 10 years.
And again, I got sniped. Hooper was my pick. Let's see.
God, we're so smart. God,
we are. We're on the same page tonight.
We all play the game too similarly.
Yeah, we do.
I do really love Martellus Bennett. He's tight end 14 right now. I think he has a huge year in that Packers offense, but I don't know. I still don't know that equates to gaining dynasty value or cracking the top 12 next year. So we'll just leave it at that. I'll say Hooper as well, and we'll wrap it up. Thank you guys again. I have enjoyed this. Again, this is one I was looking forward to for a long time and glad to get both of you guys on here together and join us tonight. So we'll wrap it up and Chad, we'll let you tell everyone where they can find your work.
Like you mentioned earlier, you can find my work. I don't write so much anymore, but you can hear my voice on the DLF podcast. You can go to dynastyleaguefootball.com and find that. And you can find me on Twitter at Chad_Scott13.
All right. And Reeves, what about you?
I mean, I'm still around, you know, doing stuff at Roto World. Definitely draft got dropped. I had a big part in that. So definitely, you know, go get that. We're going to update that. Guys like me, Evan Silva, Pat Doherty, Ray Summerlin, we're updating that draft guide throughout the summer all the way up until kickoff of the season. So definitely grab that. I will say, I mean, you got to hear it. I mean, listen, RIP Fake Goods. I mean, I miss doing it. We had our specific roles on Fake Goods, but I mean, you heard it tonight. I mean, Chad likes to play up the dynamic of the village drunk, but he knows what he's doing, and Ryan can attest that he plays in these leagues with us. And Chad's a good player, man. Like, Chad is a really good dynasty player. So, I mean, more people should heed some of the advice he's giving.
All right. Thanks again, guys. We'll be back next week with more Dynasty Blueprint.